And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, the politics of the week can all be looked at through the lens of statistics, because statistics, the data, kind of summarizes the results of the policy that the week has just gone through. And the statistics this week were just utterly disastrous, whether you were looking at the state of the economy, the state of public health, or the state of democracy. Everything showed horrible assaults against the average person. Look at unemployment. Did you notice the numbers about how many new unemployment numbers, how big the unemployment number was and how little the new jobs created were?
Yeah, it's north of 700,000 new claims for jobless. The unemployment rate stayed the same. People are dropping out of the workforce. Right now, they're talking about whether whether these temporary layoffs are going to become permanent. We have whole industries that are in danger of collapsing. The movie industry, you and I were talking about, which is an American industry that was created by America. In essence, the film industry and the distribution of films and all
of
that.
By the way, the export of films is one of America's biggest earners.
Yeah.
People don't realize it, but that brings in an enormous amount of money into the United States. Of course, it stays in the hands of the people who own the studios for the most part, but nonetheless, it's one of the biggest exports.
But they have to employ a lot of people. You look at the credits after a movie is made, and you see how many people go into this. The shoots.
I was watching a movie on TV this week, and at the end of the movie, there was a tagline that said 13,000 jobs were involved in the making of this movie. That's a lot of jobs, one movie.
It is. You know, caterers that bring in the food things like that. It's that you don't think of in terms of the movies. And now this week, we had one of the major studios announced that they're not going to release their new films to theaters. They're also going to release it for cable and streaming, live streaming at the same time, which utterly destroys all these megaplexes and whatever is left of the art type of, the individual types of theaters around the country that have been hanging on or trying to hang on. It's an enormous change that's occurring not in the industry, but the whole sociology of it. People used to go to the movies. It was an experience. You saw people. You did things. You went out to the restaurants before or after, things like that. The theater up in Tunkhannock used to have an ice cream shop right next to it. People would stop by and have something. Things like that are gone or are going to go away. And it's hard to believe how they're ever going to come back.
The Trump policy that said deny the existence of this virus, deny the effects of this virus, it'll all go away, is directly and indirectly responsible for the destruction of American society as we knew it before the virus. Like you're talking about the industry, the movie industry, and the whole social life that's around the movie industry. Gone. It's not coming back so soon. Gone.
No.
Have you been to a movie theater recently? I haven't.
We're watching it on TV at night. Try to pick which one we want out of the new TVs. You can get Netflix, you can get HBO, you can get Amazon, Disney, all of those things, old TV shows, the whole nine yards, YouTube. So we don't have to go out of the house. I've gone up to down in Music Montage. There's some restaurants that we might pick up some food from. We don't go in except just to grab and go. And there's a big Cineplex outside of there. If you see 10 cars in the parking lot at any one time, it's a lot.
Well, some days there's none. It's probably safe to go to that particular theater.
Yeah. There's some days there's none, and there are two restaurants that are directly across from it that have gone out of business, a Ruby Tuesdays and a Johnny Rockets. They're empty. They're gone, and the shops across the way, it's a mall. A lot of those shops are gone. I just read in the paper this weekend that another one, there was a pet store that was in that mall. They're out of business. The whole chain, gone. These businesses aren't coming back. Another chain there, Guitar City or something like that, they've just declared bankruptcy. They're going to be closing stores. So,
that particular chain was one of the places that young musicians would go to buy their equipment, because they didn't just sell guitars. They sold everything a band needed, electronic equipment, cables. If you can think of it, they sold it. There's no place to replace it.
Yeah. No, you could get, I think we used to go up there and buy reeds for my kids' instruments. Just a whole change now in habits and everything. Of course, online things are going great guns. We've seen that happen, but
that's true. I saw Amazon hired 400 some odd thousand workers for the Christmas season only.
Yeah,
just now.
But of course, people who work for Amazon are the warehouse workers. Some of the conditions and things like that.
Well, they're terrible. They're terrible.
Yeah,
yeah.
And Amazon has destroyed, in many ways, almost as many jobs as it's created for itself. In other ways, it was like Walmart did the same thing, where they went into towns and ruined the main street businesses.
The Amazons kind of thing, and the Walmarts of this world, they're fine until all of a sudden they wake up one morning and discover all the people they've put out of work now no longer have any money to buy anything at Walmarts and Amazon.
That's why the dollar stores were doing so well, because that's all people could afford.
So we're going to get the base to the level of bazaars in third world countries.
Yeah.
That's what it amounts to. That's the ultimate achievement of the most productive capitalism in the history of the world. The richest economy in the history of the world will reduce commerce and the people to living as they would live if they lived in a bazaar-run industry in the third world.
Yeah. Well, capitalism run amok. It devours itself.
Devours itself. It's true.
It devours itself. I mean, didn't we discuss the thing about GM and the tour that Walter Reuther was shown?
It's good to mention it again.
Yeah, he was the head of the auto workers union, and I guess the president of GM was taking him through a plant, showing him some of the new robots and saying, none of these robots ever take sick days or lunch breaks or whatever. And Reuther looked over him and said, and none of these robots is ever going to buy a GM car.
Exactly. Good for him.
But they don't think of that. They think only in their own.
It's not the job of a guy who runs a company to think of that. It's his job to maximize profit, which means cheapen his cost of goods.
It's the job of the government to think of things like that.
It should be the job of government. But if you are a person who believes there shouldn't be any job for government, which represents the thinking of the Republican Party, then you don't do that.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a COVID relief bill.
No.
We do know the moratorium on evictions is ended. The unemployment insurance supplement was ended months ago. There's massive overhanging debt that's going to come due yesterday, and there's no relief bill.
And don't forget, and the Democrats have done a very poor job of letting people know this. They passed a bill.
Yeah.
They passed a $2 trillion bill, and it was sent over to Mitch McConnell in the Senate back during the summer, 6 months ago.
Right.
And it's just sat there.
He wouldn't take it up.
And everybody's saying, well, Congress's fault. No, it's not Congress's fault. It's Mitch McConnell and the Republicans and the Senate's fault.
That's right.
It's half of Congress's fault.
That's right. When they did start talking about it and they arrived at some proposed compromise, the compromise is not $2+ trillion. The compromise is $900 billion.
Right. Which is insufficient.
It's insufficient.
They're not bailing out enough of the cities, the states. They're insisting on immunity for businesses who might screw up or cut corners in protecting workers or their customers, things like that. That's what they're all about.
Or
that's
they totally pervert the Payroll Protection Act. The point of the Payroll Protection Act was to give companies money that they could then immediately funnel to their workers. In other words, it was to underwrite their payroll. But most of those companies didn't do that. They laid off their workers and used it to pay other bills. Nobody ever looked into that. That's not regarded as corruption. But that's what most of them did, and they totally perverted the point of the Payroll Protection Act. And therefore, the Republicans now say they're not going to give more than $300 a week relief. But really, what does it matter if the workers don't get even the $300 a week? But you know, if you need $600, what is $300? It's just wasted money because you can't make do with the $300.
Well, that's why the money should flow directly.
Exactly.
We had $1,200 was sent once, but Biden said it needs to be sent again.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course, that was the Andrew Yang proposal during the debates.
Yep.
Give everybody in America, $1,000 a month?
$1,000 a month, not enough, but it's the right idea.
But it's a stimulus.
It's a stimulus. But if you need $600 a week and you get $300 a week, it's like you fell overboard. You're 60 feet away from the boat. They throw you a life preserver, which is at the end of a 30-foot rope. It's not going to get to you. They might as well not throw it to you. That's the Republican approach. It's all show and no effectiveness. And then, of course, it's not effective. The money doesn't get spent. So they appoint, Mnuchin had how many hundreds of millions of dollars to give to the Federal Reserve to use for loans. The loans weren't made. Mnuchin says, give me back the money. And they have to give him back the money, even though they could make the loans. They could still use the money.
And he's going to lock it up so it can't be used for several years.
Right.
Deliberately screwing things up.
I know.
Seems to be the whole purpose of the Trump administration between now and January 20th is to make things even worse and blame the Democrats for it. And shame on the Democrats if they let that happen.
Well, it's another form of the slogan, lock it up. Instead of lock her up, lock it up, meaning lock up anything that might help the American working man and woman from helping them.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the other area, of course, is our healthcare system that's under enormous, enormous stress.
The case today is that nearly every single ICU bed in the country is occupied.
The distribution of it is, some places that are over-occupied, so to speak.
The coronavirus is epidemic worse than ever before and worse than any place else. All of the states run by governors who are deniers that the virus exists or that any public health measures should be taken. In other words, orthodox Trumpists. That, like this woman, Naomi, whatever her name is, in the Dakotas, like the guy down in Florida, who this week it was exposed that he lied for the last 6 months about the extent of the outbreak in Florida.
Yeah, they've been covering that up. Georgia, some of these places, the governors have tried to come around or started to come around, but it's too little, too late. This week is the anniversary of Pearl Harbor. And I think every day this past week, or pretty close to it, we lost more Americans to the virus than we lost at Pearl Harbor.
Every day?
Every day, or pretty close to that every day. We've lost a couple of these days that's exceeded what we lost on 9/11. And it's only getting worse. The Thanksgiving break, they predicted it would take 2 or 3 weeks to show up. It's shown up already in explosions. I'm hearing from people who are in the healthcare system in Scranton, and the hospitals are just being overwhelmed with people. And some of the things that I've heard, that there are young people that are getting the disease, and it's not killing them, but they're going into the hospital because they're having strokes, or they're having blood clots in their lungs, because one of the things this virus does to a significant percentage of people is it creates problems in your cardiovascular system, and blood clots are one of the problems that result from it. Inflammations that occur. There are neurological effects that are occurring in people.
Well, I think the public health statisticians have discovered that for every death from the COVID-19, there are 10 to 12 lifelong debilitating diseases that people who don't die never escape from.
Yeah.
So, you know factor that in.
Yeah, well, and the models are awful. The Trump people back in March said that between 100 and 240,000 people might die. And, of course, now we're getting in close to 300,000. And they're now projecting that double that amount could die by April, that close to 540,000 deaths might occur.
And we're just talking about the United States of America.
Yeah. And, you know, while we're ragging on politicians, we've had some Democratic politicians that have done some pretty stupid things. The governor of California went to a very posh restaurant up in the Napa Valley with members of the California Medical, or lobbyists for the California Medical Society. He got caught there. The mayor of Austin, Texas, sent out a video telling people to stay home. Meanwhile, he and his family flew on a private jet to Mexico. You can't make this stuff up. I think there was somebody in Colorado did the same thing. Even Andrew Cuomo, he was going to have his mother come for Thanksgiving, you know, things like that. You can't do this anymore. I know the American people are people that don't like restrictions. They like things opened up. They like to do what they want to do when they want to do it. The cost is enormous, and every time that they do this, the long-term costs just keep rising and rising and rising.
I'm not so sure the American people are that different than any other people. I mean, and I'm not so sure, even though there's a lot of Americans who want to ignore the existence of the coronavirus, I still think that the overwhelming majority of people take it seriously and do what they are told to do and what they're informed is the right thing to do to keep themselves healthy and to keep other people from getting sick. But the publicity, the message that everybody gets is it's at least 50-50, and maybe there's more. The, you know, freedom against constraints versus constraints and so forth and so on. And of course, it's not really like that in real life. It's just the way it's presented to us. I'm sure that's true.
It's all, but they don't talk. They talk about your rights, but not about your responsibilities.
That's right.
And your responsibilities to your fellow citizen. I keep saying that no one has the right to infect other people, but it never gets framed that way. It never gets framed that way.
But in a real war, a shooting war, if the country's at war, if there's a draft, people go to the draft. If there's air raids, people go to, you know, close their blinds, close their drapes, turn off their lights. They do that. And if they don't do that, they get arrested. That's a war, because otherwise people die. Well, here's a situation where if you don't do what's right, people die. Who's running around arresting the people who are causing people to die? Nobody. I'm hoping that the Biden administration is going to have a different attitude, that it spreads throughout the population, so that the onus is on the people who violate the rules. and not on the people who are trying to follow the rules. That's what's required. You're always talking about messaging. I take it as a good point, and it's especially a good point now. The message needs to be, you want to be a good citizen, you want to be patriotic, pay attention to the rules and follow them. We're at war.
Well, we've already, Biden's already tried to start that. He's getting out there. He's giving press conferences. He's talking about things. He's going to be modeling. Came out this week that he can't mandate it, but he's going to ask everybody to wear a mask for 100 days. And he's going to be seen wearing masks, and so is the vice president-elect, who will become the vice president.
Right, there you go again, the vice president-elect. Who says they're elected? You say. All right-thinking Republicans refuse to say that these people have been elected, right?
Yeah.
And many of the Republicans are willing to go to court to claim that despite the fact that the ticket got, 80 million votes, 81 million votes,
right,
7 million or so more than the other guys, got elected, right?
Yeah. The denial that we have, well, first of all, Trump is running a scam on this. He's collecting money, and the fine print says 75% of it will not go to try to fight the election results. It goes into funds that he can use for virtually any purpose. He's done this thing before with the Trump Foundation and other things. But the interesting part is the courts don't seem to be having any problems with this. They're even Republican-dominated courts and Trump appointees. Wisconsin, the Supreme Court just refused to hear a case, and although it was a 4-3 vote, but one of the Republican justices sided with the Democrats and said, when you come to court, you've got to have evidence, and you've got to have, and when you're seeking a remedy that's as extreme as what you're seeking, it better be darn good evidence. So we're not seeing any of this. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court said the same thing. The Third Circuit said the same thing down here. But they're still trying. They're trying to do an end run with the state legislators and trying to say the legislators should invalidate the electors that were elected by the people and put their own in and just declare Trump the winner in places like Michigan and Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Pennsylvania is a good example, right?
Yeah.
Isn't there a court case filed by the members of the House of Representatives of the Pennsylvania legislature asking the courts to invalidate the election and allow them to select the electors?
Yeah, that's it. And they're trying to, if the court case fails, and I think we know it's a failure.
Well, I think it did fail on Friday.
It did fail.
Yeah.
Along with Wisconsin, I think the Trump the pro-Trump court cases are one small win, and 40 big losses. But they're still meeting. They had 75 members of the state legislature signed a petition to try to undo the results of the election.
Of the Pennsylvania House?
The Pennsylvania House.
75
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
There's only 107 of them. In other words, 70% of the elected Republican representatives to the Pennsylvania House of Representatives believe that the millions of people who voted in Pennsylvania's votes should be invalidated, and they, these 107, should choose the electors from Pennsylvania. 75 rather than however many millions, 6 million and change of people who voted.
Right, right.
So that's real democracy.
Now,
why is it, if that's the case, why don't we have the Foreign Minister of England parachuting in, or the Foreign Minister of France parachuting in, together with a team from the United Nations, to take over the election and take over the state houses? Because clearly the system is dysfunctional and the country is broken down, and the international community has to help, just like Kerry parachuted into Afghanistan and did that.
Well, you've heard me for years now talk about this Republican conceit, or hubris as I call it, that only they have the right to rule.
Yeah.
That they do not accept Democrats winning elections, no matter what the people say.
Right.
Right. And the infection or the contagion has spread so widely among the party now that we're seeing this. This week, the Trump administration announced that they were going to make the test for citizenship more difficult and have more questions and more difficult questions. Fact of the matter is, they ought to be giving this test to these state legislators.
They wouldn't pass
it. And these lawyers, because what they're doing in terms of destroying or going against the Constitution is unbelievable. You've got lawyers, and you've got Mike Flynn, who just got pardoned, asking the president to declare martial law and to have the military come in and conduct a whole new election. This is nonsense. This is the most fundamentally unconstitutional type of thinking that you can imagine. And these people took an oath to the Constitution to defend and protect it. And it's as if they never heard of the
Why isn't this
document.
Sedition?
It is sedition. You know, we already know that Michael Flynn was a foreign agent and lied about it, bordering on treasonous behavior. And now he's into seditious type of behavior. It is sedition.
We did have it the Alien and Sedition Acts. They got ruled unconstitutional.
Yeah, but there's still there is a valid sedition act. But the one that John Adams had was way out of line. But
he was an original guy. I mean, if you're Clarence Thomas. He was an originalist. He was the original originalist.
Yeah. That's for sure. the originalists, the other ones, the other presidents around him were all slaveholders. They were originalists too.
That's exactly right.
But you can't, it's unbelievable how far this extremism has gone and how much weight has been given to it. And of course,
not so much that it's extremism, it's that it's anti-democratic. It says democracy is not right. We should not have democracy, and here's a way to overcome it. That's really what it's all about. Instead of extending democracy, instead of finding a way to get people more involved in participating in civic events, instead of building the sense of community, these people are determined to destroy that kind of democracy. And really to monopolize it for themselves, to have an autocratic democracy. I mean, as long as you have a group of people who get to vote, it's a form of democracy. But if you restrict how many are in that group, then it's an autocratic form of democracy, right?
Yeah, yeah. Not everything that we do as a democracy works out well, but certainly, the elections should be honored. The will of the people should be honored, and we're not seeing that. We're not seeing that.
No, we're having demonstrations organized by the Trump forces and supported by the Republican Party. And some of these demonstrations are with guns in the street or in front of the state capitol, and some of them are in the courthouses. And all of them are to prevent the majority of the people from being civic participants, from being able to determine their own destiny. That's the whole point of it all, right?
It is. It is. And Trump, I don't think, will ever acknowledge that he lost this election. He's threatening to come back in 4 years. That's a long time. We'll have to see. But in the meantime, that kind of freezes the Republican electorate and his toadies. And, who knows? Every week, something new and even more outrageous tends to happen. And unfortunately, more people are dying of the vaccine. I wish it was better.
Sadistic statistics. That's what we have here.
That's it.
We'll see what happens next week. Biden hopefully will gain momentum. He'll do good things, but he might not. So let's see.
Well, there's one good thing this week. My son has a birthday. Happy birthday, Murray.
Happy birthday, Murray. And we'll see you next week when you're older.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.